Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing healthcare coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capitalbluecross.com. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC, offering a broad range of cardiac and vascular treatments in our community. More information is available at upmc.com/centralpaheart.
There are many, many museums, memorials, statues, and exhibits throughout the world associated with war. Often they tell the story of how a war or battle was fought or honor those who fought and died in combat. So in comparison, it can be said it probably is rare to find an exhibit that focuses on war, peace, and justice and uses different genres of art to tell stories. But that's just what the War Amongst the People from Swords to Plowshares exhibit presented by the J. Sherwood McGinnis Jr. War, Peace, and Justice Project does in cooperation with the Cumberland County Historical Society. Appearing on today's program to talk about the exhibit are Dr. Tara Lee Tappert, the curator of the exhibit, and Jennifer Pakanowski, a veteran whose art is also part of the exhibit, which I should say runs through November 10th. In Carlisle. I want to welcome both of you to the program. Dr. Tappert, let me start with you. What I described in that introduction sounds very unique. How is this exhibit unique?
The element that I think that is most unique is a balance of two sides. There's literally the show is divided in half, and so War Amongst the People is one half of the show, and it's literally on one side of the room. And From Swords to Plowshares is the other half, and it's on the other side of the room. And the war side I call the history of war making in America, and the other side I call the history of the costs of war making in America.
Why did you think it was important to present, I can't say both sides, but two different exhibits as part of the exhibit?
Conceptually, it came together with the War, Peace, and Justice Project and their side of the room, which deals with a whole section on the French and Indian War and a timeline of wars in America, wars and interventions from 1607, literally right to the present. And because I was working with military people who were putting the War, Peace, and Justice Project together, and I come to doing the other side of the exhibit as a Quaker, and it comes out of a humanitarian approach to the Quaker peace testimony. It's those two differences that actually make the exhibit as powerful as it is.
All right, something you just mentioned, and I did want to talk about this. You are a Quaker. Friends are pacifist. How does someone with your religious background become involved with projects like war?
I've actually done a lot of thinking about that, and I am not a conscientious objector. I have known too many people who have served in the military where going into the military was the way forward for them in their lives. And I have one friend in particular who's told me repeatedly at 17, he joined the Air Force because he liked to eat. He came from such a poor family that eating was an issue. And so he knew he would be able to eat if he joined the military. So that element is part of this for me. Also, Quakers have a long tradition back to World War I of humanitarian service after wars. So after the First World War, after the Second World War, Quakers were helping refugees, feeding people, taking care of them. And in 1947, the British Friends Council and the Friends, I always get the other one, it's the American Friends Service Committee, won the Nobel Peace Prize for their humanitarian work after war.
So you're comfortable with dealing with and curating, this isn't your first, obviously, but an exhibit that deals mostly with war.
Yes.
I want to turn to Jennifer Pakanowski, who is from Bethlehem, right? Here in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
I want to talk a little bit about some of your experiences. You were deployed in Iraq in 2004 as a combat medic. You also provided medical support for convoys to Marines, Air Force, and Army. Tell us about your experiences in Iraq. What did you see?
Well, it was a war. mostly what I saw was the U.S. occupying a country that didn't have any infrastructure, you know, after Saddam was overthrown, and it was just very chaotic. Sometimes I reference the Wild Wild West. It was very difficult as a soldier to tell the difference between the insurgents and the civilians. And the biggest thing I saw was loss of innocent life, especially being a medic in the military. I was expecting to be led by that humanitarian mission of winning hearts and minds, which I truly believed when I was going in, especially as a medic. So it was very challenging to see what we were actually doing in the war and then what I thought we were doing.
So your attitude between when you were deployed and during the 2 years you were in Iraq, it sounds as if you had a change of heart.
Yeah, I thought we were really going over there to do some good and to help the people. And I just ended up on convoys, and convoys are the front line. So IED explosions, improvised explosive devices, RPGs, I was shot at. We did medical support for the Navy hospital. We were just sent everywhere during the 1 year I was in Iraq in 2004.
Oh, 1 year? Okay, okay. So you returned to the United States in 2006. That's where I thought, you went to Germany after Iraq. What was your state of mind at that time when you returned to the U.S.?
I felt very betrayed and disillusioned by the whole deployment. In addition, the Army had said they were going to pay my student loans off, and they didn't. They said they were the wrong kind of loans. So instead of having a homecoming, I went into a trial, which went on for years. Mm-hmm. So I upheld my end of the contract of going to war and joining the military, and they did not. So that was something also I had to navigate, as well as eventually being diagnosed with severe post-traumatic stress disorder, which my specialist, my psychologist, said was my human reaction to extraordinary circumstances. So a lot of people do the PTS, but because I am human, I had this reaction, and that was something that I was able to build a foundation on, which led to my organization, Women Veterans Empowered and Thriving, did a collaboration with the exhibit of writing workshops and a performance.
Well,
it led me.
Let's talk about that a little bit, kind of the genesis of how that happened. When you returned, you joined veterans groups, but you didn't get a lot of satisfaction out of those, did you?
There was some satisfaction of the camaraderie, because that's what I was searching for. That's what they ingrain in you in the military. But there was still a lot of self-sacrificing. People weren't doing a lot of self-care. There was a lot of addiction. I experienced the addiction as well. And I was searching for something different, something where we could It felt like we were gutting ourselves on stage and in workshops, and I wanted to create more of a container, and I did create more of a container so that we could open ourselves up securely and then also close the space and then have that support around us, including civilians, including family members.
So,
so it was an arc.
Your mother was very instrumental in leading your path to that. She suggested a writing and papermaking retreat in Massachusetts. You didn't want to go. It changed your life, though. In what way?
Yeah, it was in Martha's Vineyard. And I had trouble driving because when I would drive, I would go back to the convoys. I would be back in Iraq. I had a very hard time staying in the present moment. And she just said, you're going. And then she brought our dog, China, a bull mastiff. And she was like, we're going to do this as a team. And she packed my bags for me because I was very resistant to change. And also with the post-traumatic stress, I didn't have any skills at that point to de-escalate myself. So it felt dangerous as well. But she believed that it would, change my life. And it did.
In what
She's very intuitive that way.
In what way did it change your life? What opened your eyes?
Even though it was challenging to speak my story and I didn't think we were doing it in the safest way, I felt a release. I felt something. I felt that hands on my back of like, oh, something's here. This is magic. This is going to help you. I just felt the pull. And then when I learned about like the ancient Greeks and Romans and Native Americans, and they were doing these storytelling rituals for thousands of years, this was not a new concept. Once I started to lead down that path, I was like, oh, of course I'm called to do this. It was very purpose driven. And then also life saving because it was my own suicide prevention.
Storytelling about what? Was it all about your experiences in Iraq?
In the beginning, yes. In the beginning, I was. It wasn't even about Iraq, actually, in the beginning. It was about how angry I was when I came home and what I faced and being a woman combat veteran and not having support and people trying to lock me up in a psych ward instead of helping me learn skills to help myself, to breathe, to create space, to create, go to acupuncture, all these different holistic things, not just throw meds at me. Or try to lock me up in any sense of the world, including incarceration. There's so many veterans incarcerated. So did I answer your question?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Before we move on, Jennifer, I wanted to ask you, okay, you talked about the ways in which you recovered or healed. Let me ask you this question. Do you feel like you're completely healed?
No.
No?
No.
What would it take?
I'm fully aware that post-traumatic stress is forever, but I feel empowered to use my skills, to lean on my community, to continue to build my self-care and my support system, which I didn't have in the beginning, and be able to ask for help. I think that's the biggest thing in continuing to try new modalities. Every time they bring something out, I'm like, I'll try it.
Well, how did writing and paperwork, how did that help you?
In the beginning, when I did the papermaking, I think as you see in the video in the exhibit, I also thought it was dumb. I was like,
Maybe you should explain what it is.
So we sit in a room, usually at a table, and we cut up our uniforms. And my biggest question was, what is cutting my uniform up going to do? Like, I don't get it. And then other people have like a response of, this is my uniform. I can't cut it up. That's, that's against all the values or something. I didn't have a problem cutting it up. I just didn't know what the point was. And then I started. And all my rage and my anger and how the military betrayed me and everything just came right up to the surface. And I was sweating and I was bleeding and I was cutting the uniform, not myself. And I was, it was quite an experience. It was quite a release.
A release is a great way to describe it. So what about this exhibit? You're just one of the artists whose work is part of the exhibit. But what is it about this exhibit that sticks out to you?
I found it really, really moving. One of the pictures in the exhibit is of Jacob George, who completed his suicide years ago when Fallujah or when Mosul fell. And seeing his name and hearing his music, and it was really moving for me, and just a reminder of why I do what I do, to try to help people reintegrate much more easily than my generation, Jacob's generation, did generations before. Like, I'm hoping that we can begin to really do something different with this release of storytelling and paper making. And then just seeing, I brought my best friend with me, who's also my vice president, Karina Brown, and I said, "Look, there's me." And I just started crying. And I have that piece of paper in my house. And it's just seeing how young I was and how we are like sending babies to war. We are taking the youth of America and grinding them up and sending them home and then having no reintegration for them. So it just kind of, it did, not kind of, it reaffirmed what I'm doing pretty solidly.
Dr. Tappert, what Jennifer just described is pretty powerful. And I have to say that just the booklet that was sent to me about the exhibit, I have to come and see it in person, but just the booklet itself touched me. It's powerful. What do you want the person who views the exhibit to take away?
Really, two things. One is that, as humans, there's just something in human DNA, the way we're put together, war is part of who we are. And so that half of the room with a timeline of over 250 wars that America has had, not counting wars that have happened around the world. We had originally thought about doing a timeline that we were calling Wars Across the Millennia. There's so many, you can't get it on a timeline. There's so many. And so we took it down to just the wars in America and 250 wars since 1607. That's a lot of war.
That strikes me as something you said. I mean, it was a simple statement you just made. That's a lot of war. Is that why the timeline is there? Is that why that timeline is important? Because as you have written, America has been in 11 official wars, but you talk about 250. Do people realize the amount of warfare that this country has been, and that doesn't even count what goes on around the world, but 250 wars in since 1607. Why is that important that that timeline is part of this exhibit?
Because it really shows in a very visceral way warfare, even on a timeline, and you look and it's war, with the Native Americans. I'm losing my train of thought here.
Don't worry, I do it every day.
Thank you. And that just visually looking at that timeline really is impactful. And one of the things that I always have said about these exhibits that I curate, they are in some ways more for American civilian culture than veteran culture. Civilians don't know these experiences that people like Jenny have had, because such a small percentage in the most recent years, it's such a small percentage of people that have gone to serve and then to be in combat and then coming back. What Jenny's group is doing is to help deal with those consequences that include addiction, suicide, and homelessness.
From an artistic point of view, there's a lot going on in this exhibit. The faces of war, the cost of wars, poetry, music. As I said in the introduction, there's a lot of different genres here. From a personal point of view, poetry written by some of the veterans, to me, was one of the most touching parts of it, really got to the heart of it. But what were you trying to do with just using that many genres? I only have about a minute left.
To show that we actually need that much variety and approaches and ways to get at this. And quickly, I'm teaching co-teaching an NEH class on dialogues on the experience of war. And that's what we're doing, is looking at literature, poetry, American documents, and artwork.
So the exhibit is War Amongst the People, From Swords to Plowshares. It's presented by the J. Sherwood McGinnis Jr. War, Peace, and Justice Project in cooperation with the Cumberland County Historical Society. Runs through November 10th in Carlisle. I want to thank Dr. Tara Lee Tappert, the curator of the exhibit, and Jennifer Pakanowski, who's a veteran whose art is part of it. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.